The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I'd like to ask your help.
The people in the cheaper seats, clap your hands. And the rest of you, if you just rattle your jewelry.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Oh, talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And speaking of rock and roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan gets us going with the patented joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, this is Duff McKagan calling you from a gas station here in the beautiful San Gabriel Valley. I've heard on the radio this woman went to court. She was in court for killing her husband with a guitar. And the judge, you know, said to her, okay, well, first offender? And she goes, no, first with a Gibson, then a Fender. Thank you very much.
That's a little bit of a Muso joke right there. You got to be a musician to understand it. A Fender is a type of a guitar, and a Gibson is a type of a guitar. So there you go. Thanks, as always, to Duff McKagan of the stadium touring act Guns N' Roses, and, of course, Walking Papers, his other band, for never missing a joke of the week, especially since he's super busy rehearsing for the Guns N' Roses upcoming summer tour, headlining the Download Festival, amongst other stadium and arena shows. Festival's always got such an amazing lineup. Fozzy played there last summer. We're playing Bloodstock this summer. We'll start touting all of those dates coming up soon, as well as the next leg of the Judas Rising tour, which starts in Atlanta August 24th and goes all the way to the end of September, ending off in, I believe, Fort Lauderdale. So all those dates will be coming up very, very soon. Lots of good rock and roll to come. And speaking of good rock and roll and great rock and roll, Charlie Benante from Anthrax is back for Beatles Benante, talking all things Beatles. And this time we're joined by fellow Fab Four fanatic, Sami Zayn from the WWE. We've got three more Beatles albums up for discussion. We each picked one. I chose Beatles for Sale. Charlie picked Magical Mystery Tour, and Sami, by default, opted for Abbey Road. You'll hear why coming up. We break down the songs, the performances, name our favorite and least favorite songs in each record, share all kinds of trivias and stories about the Beatles. So let's get to it. It's With the Beatles Benante featuring Sami Zayn coming up right here on Talk is Jericho. This is funny because two of my favorite podcasts, we've been doing this for 3 years, two of my favorite podcast guests, one is Charlie from Anthrax, one is Sami from WWE.
Hello.
Always talking about Beatles, Charlie and I.
Always.
And Sami and I have discovered we have a very huge connection in music. And the last time Sami was on my show, we had another guy from the WWE, and the show was called The Power of Music. And just how when you meet somebody that likes the same band as you, you automatically become friends.
You bond.
You bond. So today, Charlie, Sami, and I are doing Beatles Benante Part 2.
And we will bond.
And you guys will bond.
We've never met. Yeah, the first time today. A few minutes ago.
Over the love of the Beatles.
Yes.
Which is always, like when you find huge Beatles fan, there's a lot of them, but there's not as many in this day and age as there probably was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's a universal thing, of course. You can meet someone in Japan who's a complete Beatles nut, and you immediately have that bond with them, too. I often find that with people, they sometimes they'll differ in the way that they approach that Beatle kind of fandom type of thing. You know, someone will gravitate more towards the John side of things. Some will just go for the Paul, you know?
You've obviously been a fan a long time. So, yeah. I mean, I find this for myself. Do you find there's times when you start gravitating more towards one and then the other? Or do you kind of switch?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like a few years ago I was more of a Paul guy. Nowadays I'm feeling a little more John-ish. So well,
I never really I always loved George, but then Charlie pointed out how cool George is.
Right. You said he'd be the cool guy at the party, right?
That's Charlie's quote. Yeah. That's Charlie's quote.
Because everybody wanted, you know, oh, Paul's the cool guy, John's the cool guy, but then all the cool people would go to George's house.
Yeah, yeah.
What's so cool about George?
I think once that movie came out, that Living in the Material World, the Scorsese documentary, you haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, not yet, but you told me actually that his album, when they all went solo, mm-hmm. is the biggest, most successful of all
actually,
of them,
no,
right?
Ringo's was the highest Ringo's. Selling.
Really?
Not.
Well, Ringo's had the biggest hits.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
When the first four came out. But see, here's another thing. My cousin and I went and saw Ringo get into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, which I thought was much deserved and long overdue, and went through a little Ringo phase. Like, what a great, and maybe not so much his songs where he's singing, but just listening to his drumming, which...
He's a good singer. I think he's a good singer.
He's a serviceable singer with personality.
Yeah. Well, right. That's all that matters.
He's like Ozzy or Dylan or something like that.
He can't get up and just belt it out.
Right,
but
right.
he can do a version of Ringo that's just like, who else could sing Yellow Submarine?
Right. He's made that his song.
Thank you. That's Ringo.
That's his tune, you know. Yeah. And even with, we've discussed this, and we'll discuss this more with the albums we're going to talk about today, but his drumming, you listen to the Lars podcast. I said, Lars, you're the Ringo of heavy metal, meaning Ringo/Lars, but Ringo plays the best part for the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the most in your face or dynamic, but his fills and his shuffle beats. And
I think that's the genius of the Beatles. Overall, though, is like everything is, it's not overdone, it's not gratuitous, it's just right for the song.
What's best everything. For the
yes.
song?
And it's sometimes very simple, but there's a genius in that simplicity, you know?
Sure. But that got pulled, I think that type of thing got pulled apart during the White Album era.
As far as the simplicity of it?
No, I think maybe getting tired of Paul saying to play it this way.
Right.
And then maybe everybody was just like, fuck, I'm doing it the way I want.
Mm-hmm.
Sloppy. I don't care.
Yeah, so confirm or deny this, but I heard actually, you know, he had a falling out with the band Ringo did around the White Album.
He did.
And he left the band.
For 2 weeks.
And the first two tracks on the White Album.
Well, that's never been really
right? Dear Prudence and Back in the USSR. Apparently it's Paul drumming.
I've also heard
Has that been confirmed?
I've also heard that on Why Don't We Do It in the Road. That's Paul doing everything on that.
There's pictures of Paul behind the kit.
Playing the kit, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this as I was listening to the albums that we're going to talk about. Is you know, you'd hear about, like, for example, Kiss in the late 70s and even in the 80s. You never, like, now, as musicians, they basically said everybody played everybody's parts. We weren't really even too sure who played on what, who was on bass. It wasn't always Gene. Sometimes it was Paul. Sometimes it was Bruce Kulick. Sometimes it was
Bob Kulick.
Sometimes Anton Figg played all the drums. I think with the Beatles is the same, where they don't even know for sure who played on what.
Interesting.
And you can see that on an anthology when you watch the three of them do the interview. They're like, did you play bass on Hey Jude or was that me? It's like, I think I was on piano. I'm not really too sure.
Because there was sometimes that.
That's
Paul,
amazing. Right? These timeless classics that we all obsess over. We're doing a podcast over it.
No,
they don't even know
who played on it.
Because Paul had to play piano on a song, so George would play bass.
Right.
And John would play guitar.
Probably guitar, yeah. I think that even on the All You Need Is Love, that video they did, I think George might be on bass. Or John's on bass.
I think that's
bass.
Paul on bass.
There's a bunch of stuff
that's so
going
him.
On.
Yeah. That's such
that's
a
true.
Paul bass.
That's true. That's true. But so we did the last Beatles Benanti, which was we did Abbey Road and we did Help and we did Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
And I think we both chose one and then met in the middle. So today we're going to do part two, and the three albums we chose were Beatles for Sale, Magical Mystery Tour, which was your choice.
Yeah, it's great.
And Abbey Road, which I think I chose for Sale. You chose Abbey Mystery.
Mystery.
And we agreed on Abbey Road. And then we brought Sammy, and I felt bad because we'd already chosen our three.
And Abbey Road is my favorite album. I would have chosen Abbey Road anyway.
Is it really?
Good. So it is ipso facto your choice.
Perfect, yes.
It's funny. Last summer we were doing festivals in Europe, and I took her with me, and then we had a day off. And I took her to Abbey Road, and we did the walk.
Yeah, how great is that? Yeah.
And just like I wanted to explain it to her that this is where it all kind of happened.
Yeah. Iconic. Like,
this place, this building transformed music.
Right.
Forever. You know, this is the place.
To this day, there's a band that we toured with. We took on tour in England called The Dirty Youth, and they're up and coming. And they're recording their new record in Abbey Road. I'm super jealous. Like, yeah, recording Abbey Road. Like, still has... It's like training and wrestling in Calgary.
Right,
it's still got this
yes.
You know, it's funny. I did the Abbey Road thing too a couple of years ago. And Sam, you got to take a trip the next time you're in London.
Just I've done it.
Okay, yeah, great. So it's not as big
as you think. It's busier than you'd think,
too. It's very busy.
It's hard to get the picture.
It's not closed off. Those cars are zipping
down. Yeah, they're zipping by.
The first time I was there was probably about 15 years ago, maybe longer than that. And I went for the tour of maybe doing something there. And the A studio was still functioning, as you know. And I remember walking down the stairs and just getting this chill over me, man.
That big open room.
And just the window.
Yeah.
Look down at it.
We're talking about walking across the street, though, like the album cover, right? Because, like, I think there's probably some dudes that live, like, they have to drive past there every day.
Yeah, and see with tourists.
Oh, my
God.
And everybody tries to walk across the street with the straight arms to get the walking.
It's really hard.
They were just walking. Yeah. They weren't, like, doing, like, a tin soldier march or anything like
that. It's really hard to get that stride down, though.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
And the flow of traffic.
Yes, it's delicate.
I
have one decent one, and it's at night. It's not the same.
I, in the fine tradition,
it's not the same.
Wore a suit with no shoes.
Oh, cool. That's cool.
Which was totally cool until I stepped in a big pile of bird shit at the end. I was standing on the side with one foot up, scraping the poop off of my foot. But yeah, that's the
beautiful. I hope it was a blackbird.
Nice. It was a bluebird.
Well, I'm Blue Jay. Way.
Blue Jay, yeah.
All right, so the first album today on Beatles Benante 2. Maybe we'll call it with the Beatles Benante.
Oh, that's not bad.
Name. Yeah, or Beatles Benante for Sale. But it's Beatles for Sale, which came out December 4th, 1964.
Wow.
So this is like real early on in the career when they were putting out two albums a year.
Yeah, every 6 months they would just.
Yeah, because Hard Day's Night was also in 1964.
Wow.
So, and we were talking about how it's a little bit of a different album from the previous ones.
Yeah,
I think the
effects on them were starting to show, of course.
Of Beatlemania?
Beatlemania.
Right.
And I think prior to that, you had songs all about holding hands and She Loves You and All My Loving. And then on this album, you have songs like, you know, No Reply, mm-hmm. Babies in Black.
I'm a loser.
And things are turning.
What I noticed, too, is...
Are those all John songs? He was always the more depressed of the...
And that kicks off with a triple shot of John depressed.
Yeah, I'm a loser. What is it? I'm a loser.
Babies in Black.
Babies in Black.
It's No Reply.
No Reply. Loser, and Babies in Black.
And the cover, they all just look kind of like...
tired. Yeah.
And I think the famous story is that George was super sick.
Yeah.
He had bad throat or pneumonia or something. So on the cover, he looks really
sick. He's sick.
He just looks like shit, basically, you know. But like you said, this was when the Beatlemania thing was kind of sucking them in.
So what's the album that comes out right after this? Is it Revolver or Rubber Soul?
No. After this one, I think it's, maybe Help.
Help is
the next.
It's the two movies. Yeah, exactly. It was Hard Day's Night before it.
Right.
Then Beatles for Sale, then Help afterwards.
And Help. So, basically screaming
same
for help.
Thing,
right.
Same thing.
So really you see exactly what you're saying there, that transition. Yeah. Like, but this is getting a little overwhelming, you know?
And you got to think how quickly that happened, because this is 1964. They came over in 64, basically, right? In February, right?
In February of 64, so it's freezing here in America, especially New York. And America's still getting over the Kennedy assassination. So things are kind of crazy here still. And then these guys came and basically changed, made people happy again, brought excitement to our country.
Well, and that's why I think you'll never see, and we've discussed this too, Sam, you'll never see another band like this, because they came at the right possible time where the country was down. It was something completely different, and now it's something completely different.
You can't, yeah.
Where you had never
The world really is simply not the same type. It's not the same place. You can't, I just don't think anybody can do anything to achieve this anymore, you know?
Just the way they came over with the way the country was.
Yeah, time and
society
You're right.
To where everything they did became, you know, if they wore a plaid shirt, suddenly there'd be 20 million plaid shirts sold.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that was kind of their thing. So, but we're talking about the record, how it is darker. Still a lot of covers, though. They did a lot of covers in the early years.
Yes. This is them kind of phasing it out, because I think after this on Help, I'm not sure there's any. It's all original.
It might be their last album with a lot of covers on it, which was filler because they were doing so many records.
Right.
But I also heard that they went back to the Hamburg days on this record and just more of a rock and roll type band and just bringing the covers again. And George was singing on some, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think that probably timing-wise, they didn't have the time to write as many songs as they would have. You know, they were touring a lot, just everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, gone. And they had to basically, they were saying, like, so much press and so much stuff going on, they would just hide, like, in a room
by themselves. In the bathroom.
In the bathroom, the four of them, just hanging out. Like, there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, nowhere else to go.
And let's talk about just briefly, how many girls do you think were getting brought in and out of those rooms?
Probably crazy.
Well, see, and we've discussed this, but I don't, for me, it's shocking that there's not more dirt on them. Well, like, you never, I don't know, I know quite a bit about the Beatles, but I still don't know about any of the dirt with the girls and the drugs really and whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It's really tightly.
But there's got to be Beatle there's babies from that era. There's
but well, you would think that they would be coming out. Like, obviously, if a dude looks like Lennon or McCartney, yeah, it's pretty specific.
Pose me,
right?
Father.
But that's, I mean, I just love that. And we talked about that one guy, Jimmy Nichols, was when Ringo had tonsillitis, he replaced Ringo for like 10 days. On a Hollywood
right, you told
tour,
me this,
and they just did an article with him where, first of all, he said it ruined his life because he could never get another gig. It was like the biggest time of his life for 10 days, and then he was done. But he said that he was known as a coxman and as a partier and as a drinker, and he said those guys blew him out of the water. He said, I thought I was a bad
yeah,
man.
I don't know. I never, guys, you never see that never side of them, you know? You never heard about it.
And the thing about the Beatles, too, is like every time you see a performance back then, dude, these guys were
always on
10.
And they couldn't even hear themselves. They're still locked in.
Like when Paul would sing that part in Babies in Black, you know, he comes in with
Yeah. That when they play that, I want to say it's at Shea Stadium, right?
They do that at Shea Stadium. What a strange choice.
I think so.
Man, yeah, that's awesome. That might be my favorite song as far as like John Paul harmony together. Mm-hmm.
That's
man,
awesome.
It's amazing.
When that part comes in, it's just like, wow.
Oh, it's just
the harmony. The harmonies on that whole album.
It's clean.
Because I re-listened to the album. I haven't listened to it in a while, and then I knew we were doing this discussion, so I listened to it recently, even on the way here, and I was like, my God, the harmonies on this album. Well, it's some of their, it's some like between Paul and John, especially.
That's
so good.
I always got into, you know, I've been through this later Beatles period. And then we did the first one, Charlie, when I think you chose, it was Hard Day's Night, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, Hard Day's Night.
I was like, oh, that's an interesting choice. Like, okay. And then you realize, like, early Beatles is just as good as later Beatles.
Yeah.
Like, later Beatles gets the steam because of the psychedelia of it.
Yeah. Right. And they're more viewed as artists.
Yes.
They're artists now,
sure.
You know, but they were writing these songs at what, 21, 22, and they're genius songs.
Oh, Hard Day's Night is an awesome song.
Just, well, yeah.
Just in
it's perfect.
It has a perfect start, and it has an even perfect. The end is perfect too.
As a rock and roll, yes. Yeah. The fade out.
Great cowbell.
Basically, here, John and Ringo are 24.
That's insane.
Paul is 22, and George is
21.
What the hell, man?
Right.
Right. But so, these guys have also been at it since they were 16.
Yeah. Yeah, 15,
yeah, but still,
14.
What is that? Six years and you're creating timeless art?
Yeah, but
that we're talking about on a podcast 60 years later?
I know, right?
Come on.
Yeah, I know, but you think about it and they were only together really making records for 8.
Mm-hmm. The whole Beatles,
run, right? Was what, 62 to 70?
Basically,
as far as records, right?
Basically, it's 69.
69,
yeah,
really? That's right.
69.
That's right.
So 7 years for the Beatles' entire run.
That's insane.
I told Lars this. I said, the time it took for you between albums is longer than the Beatles' entire run.
That's insane.
It's insane.
All right, so let's kick it off. So No Reply starts off the album. Great. It's funny because you think of an opening track, like, you know, Anthrax or Foz, you want to have a real bam, bam. And it's
it is
not
an interesting
that,
choice.
But
yeah.
It's a great tune. I don't know if it's a great opening tune, but did they really care about that stuff back in those days?
Probably not.
Just a cool, you know, start.
I think it was about like the A side and maybe the B side and the hit track and whatever, right? Like,
you
really only start getting into later, and especially you really see when Sgt. Pepper comes out, where a complete album, you know, front to back.
Well, yeah, because these albums never had singles on them either. The singles would come out.
There was one on that album.
I think 8 days a week, right?
8 days a week.
Yeah.
But mostly, then they would have two or three other singles before. I think She's a Woman was one and whatever.
That's
I Feel
right.
Fine.
She's a Woman
was around
which
at that point.
Great, that's a heavy tune.
It's a super, but they're not even on albums.
No.
They're just singles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I love
so No
I
Reply,
feel fine.
A John kind of a.
I Feel Fine is historic, right? The distortion,
the feedback
there at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Invented.
Yeah, invented
feedback. So No Reply, John, abandoned lyrics. You know, I saw your face in the window, you know? Like, she would, like, what a bitch. She just leaves them hanging.
Yeah.
Is she the same girl from Norwegian Wood?
Ooh, maybe. No. Maybe she's just younger at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know. But good tune. There's also kind of a cool little salsa shakeup in the second verse.
Like, why do they do that stuff?
Because they loved all that stuff. That kind of, well, remember Paul would always do Besame Mucho.
Yeah. That's right.
Those type of songs.
But they would throw those little parts in there. Just for, it's almost like I said, there's no such thing as prog rock back then, and it's not prog rock, but it's from that mindset where let's just make the second verse a little different from the first, which no one was really doing, you know. And then it goes to I'm a Loser, which is another kind of downtrodden, sad tune.
I'm thinking if you're a 14-year-old girl who's in love with the Beatles and you get this album for the first time, you're excited and you put it on your record player and then starts. God, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm a loser.
Why does he want to hold my hand? What's going on here? Why is he so sad?
But probably what was going on here is he was discovering Dylan too.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So I think these three songs may have reflected his Dylan passion too. So he's like, I could be a little bit more deep.
Yeah, because when Dylan came out, that changed the scene a lot too, right?
Right.
His whole vibe. So, one quick thing I have to say about No Reply. Best bridge that they only do once.
Yeah, dude.
If I were you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like they never do it again. No. It's like only one time.
You know, it's funny. You were talking about Mike Portnoy, or I don't know if it was even recording here, but Mike Portnoy and Yellow Matter Custard did this CD One Night in New York, and I have it. And when they do that song, they actually say, okay, hang on. After the song's done, they go, this is the best bridge ever.
Yeah.
Let's just play the bridge again. That's and they great. Just do.
I was going to
say. Just the bridge.
I didn't know that you had the Yellow Matter Custard.
Yeah.
That's great.
It was hard to find.
See, you are. Anybody that has Yellow Matter Custard, you got your slice. Because I was going to mention that I remember Mike going, this is the greatest bridge of all time. You have to
do it again. If I were you. Yeah, right.
They do that part again, right? And then the triple, Babies in Black, a third down, somebody's dead or something.
Yeah, that dude. Probably is my, I don't know, 8 Days a Week's great, but that might be my favorite song on the song.
On the record?
I love Babies in Black.
This is a song with that Paul part.
Yeah.
Where he just comes in. Oh,
how long would it take? So this, the harmonies in this song?
For me, yeah. And it's like, I'm not like a musician, so I can't speak about it from the technical aspect. But, usually when, one guy's kind of at the forefront, one guy's a little bit in the back, I feel like here they're singing 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And they just bring their energy. Oh, man. It's just
the way it's mixed is total.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, on these songs, too, they gave Harrison a lead section, too, a lot.
Yes.
Like Babies in Black has that.
Yeah. I notice a lot. He'll start his lead with kind of mirroring the melody.
Yeah,
like in a bow, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, go somewhere else.
It always starts that kind of like that was the rule of a guitar solo.
Yeah,
in 64. You have to start with the melody.
Yeah.
And then finally, we go into rock and roll music, which is a Chuck Berry cover. A great tune, kind of in the twist and shout mode. And I noticed some awesome bass playing on this.
Yes.
Walking the Dog, McCartney bass.
Yeah. And you can't hear it as well as the latter records when they took the bass up a bit. Back then, you had to, listen for the bass,
I don't think bass was really important back in those days. I think there was no such thing as a famous bass player.
Yeah.
He barely had guitar players. He was mostly just singers, right?
Right.
Steve Harris wasn't around.
Like you don't know who played bass on like Elvis songs. There was no. It was the stand-up guy. Boom, boom, boom. But yeah, Paul kind of really took the bass playing. And still, in my opinion, still one of the best, or maybe the best bass player of all time.
Dude, he's so melodic and just adds this whole dimension to Beatles songs.
Mm-hmm. And here we go again. That's four songs in a row with John doing the lead vocal.
Yeah.
This could be like the last John being the boss of the band.
Yeah. Album, he was kind of at the...
He was...
Most of the songs have him on the vocals, I think, on this album, actually.
And then a classic McCartney little doodle, I'll Follow the Sun.
I love I'll Follow the Sun.
Great tune.
Great song, man.
When I was little, really little, and my sisters would always watch the Beatle cartoons and stuff, this was one of the songs that was always on the cartoon.
Really?
Yeah, I'll Follow the Sun. And it was never a favorite of mine either. It just, I always...
But never a single. I don't know if he even plays it live now.
No. But you could see where this was going.
Yeah. As far as
his style and his type of Yesterday was coming. Mm-hmm, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yesterday hadn't come out yet at this point, huh?
No.
That was on.
And this is a pure Paul song. You know,
Absolutely.
It's Paul.
It's also one of those ones where I wonder if anybody even played on it.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just maybe Paul in the studio just mess. Well, George does though. He does.
Oh, that's right. A lead. George is going to do a lead here.
Yeah, exactly. You just come out and do the lead. And then a kind of a strange one, a kind of a salsa tune, Mr. Moonlight.
Yeah, not another one of my favorites.
Not a good
so,
one, not a favorite.
Widely regarded as one of the least popular Beatles songs, and I see why. But I will say this, John, the opening vocal, that's
very good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then it's all downhill from there. Yeah. But man, is that great.
And it's a cover song.
He can wail, man. They can sing. They are great.
They're great
singers.
Rock and roll singer.
Yeah.
Really
Paul,
is.
Too. They're great.
Yeah.
And to have two of them, you know, how do you get two of these people in one band?
Well, that's what we're saying.
What the hell? Let alone three or four. They're all great. How?
That's what Paul says. He said the Beatles were a square. He said each guy had a side. And if one of those sides is taken away, the whole thing would collapse. It's not just my square is bigger than John's square. Ring. It's like every side is even.
Yeah,
it's a good way of looking at it because it's true. But you're right, though, too. That.
And hey, I listened to Mr. Moonlight again, you know, listening, knowing I was going to do this talk. I haven't listened to it in years. And I completely forgot about this Hammond organ that comes in. It's so odd. This song, I don't know, man.
It's wedding singer music. Yeah. It really is. It's not a good tune, but thankfully, at least it's not their song. It's a strange cover, but and then we get back to the rock and roll Kansas City, Hey Hey Hey, which I think is
one of my favorite covers of theirs.
Like
yeah, one of my favorites.
And then that's a good Paul Richard style vocal,
yes, absolutely.
Screaming, you know, shuffle type beat. Yeah. But you know, once again, it's like you think about playing covers on a record, and there's seven covers on this record and seven originals. Yeah. It's half and half.
That's cool.
It's half and half.
You know, so I think
so those people made some money.
They did, right. And then maybe the highlight of the record, 8 Days a Week.
Great song.
I mean, all across the board.
Another great chorus, great bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the bridge down? What's the bridge?
Hello, me.
Oh, yeah. Great intro. Fade in.
Awesome.
Such a good tune. And
soupy.
What's that?
It's very soupy.
Soupy.
When it kicks in.
Yeah.
You know, and it probably saved this record.
You think?
I think so. As far as like a big hit, that's their only real.
Good point.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going the blue and red records, the hits, this is the only one.
The only one on this record.
Yeah.
So I guess this is the one that the fans probably were like, whew.
Yeah. No kidding, right?
Thank God, there's a hit.
This is the antisocial of this record.
But 8 Days a Week, probably one of my favorite Beatles songs of all time.
Wow. And a classic Ringo title. He would always come up with these euphemisms.
Yeah.
Hard Day's Night is his.
Yeah.
Tomorrow Never Knows.
I love that one.
8 Days a Week is his as well.
That's funny.
Or actually, that might be from The Limo Driver. I think it's a limo driver. So how's it going? I've been working 8 days a week, and they took that down and writ it down. But yeah, definitely a classic. And then another strange choice of a cover, "Words of Love."
I didn't know that was a cover,
Buddy Holly.
Oh
yeah, not another one of my favorites.
I agree with you on that, but listening to it again, there's some great singing. Listen, there's
the
great
singing's
singing
great, right? Right, yeah. The singing's
but
great.
Yeah, not
no. The songs.
Yeah.
In fact, to be honest with you, the whole second half of this, I'm not my favorite.
It
at
never
all.
Ends up on a Beatles mixtape.
Yeah.
Well, of the remaining songs here,
hold on. If you thought "Words of Love" was bad, then comes the real stinker of the album, "Honey Don't."
I actually like "Honey Don't." I like it. It's Ringo. He's singing.
They tended to have Ringo be the stinker song. Songs in the album basically all the way through until Abbey Road.
Yeah.
You know,
or, George too, really.
Well, he had a couple decent ones.
On this one is George's "Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby," right?
Yeah.
Tucked away at the very end of the album.
Yeah. But it was important.
You know, let's get the George song on there at the end.
George needs a song. You know what's funny is when I was listening to this on the plane, for some reason, if there's certain songs I listen to, if I don't have Wi-Fi, they don't play on my phone for some reason. And this whole album plays until it gets to "Everyone's Trying to Be My Baby." It just goes right back to no reply.
They won't even acknowledge it. Yeah.
But yeah, "Honey Don't." They give Ringo these songs with these horrible lyrics. act naturally. And, you know, I know he wrote Don't Pass Me By, but like, honey, don't. Like, hey, baby, when you say you will, when you won't. You know, and it's just like,
I don't know. I'm kind of partial to the Ringo songs. You know, maybe I have a soft spot for them. Well, I like those songs. I like all the ones you mentioned.
Honey, don't.
But I must say that the George songs prior to this album, I love.
What's this?
Happy Just to Dance With You.
Oh, that's a great song.
Don't Bother Me.
That's Happy Just to Dance With You is a great tune, man. Love great tune.
So I just think they had to have the other Beatles sing something, and it's like, well, we don't have time to work on a song, so let's do this.
Pick something.
Used to do it at Hamburg, so do it again.
Which I, once again, love the only band ever besides the Beatles to do this was Kiss, where all four guys sing. Yeah. And sing good tunes. So, you know, I give them credit for at least including the boys.
And it paid off in the later albums.
Yeah.
Like when you get to Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and they're all...
We'll get there.
We'll get there, yeah.
We gave them confidence.
Now this, Every Little Thing, to me, one of the most underrated Beatles songs.
Great intro.
How's the intro? Oh, damn.
Every thing she does, for me.
I love this song.
Ooh. When I made a mixtape for a girl once of all Beatles, does it show how much I liked her? This was on it.
That's a great tune.
I think it's underrated. I think Paul even said he wanted this to be a single, but it was like an 8 out of 10 rather than a 12 out of 10 like the rest of their tunes.
Yeah, yeah.
He just couldn't get it perfect, but I think it's a pretty... Great harmony in the chorus. Oh,
it's beautiful.
Every little thing.
Think it's timpani.
Boom, boom. That's all George Martin, right?
Oh, yeah.
The timpani there. Boom, boom. Like the give you some boom, epic style stuff. But
there's a lead in here, too.
And that,
down.
I think the musical performances on a lot of these songs are incredible, but the songs themselves don't grab me the way, obviously, like, you know, 8 Days a Week grab only me, but everybody else. But
if Every Little Thing was a Kinks tune, one of their best tunes.
Yeah, if it was anybody but the Beatles, this is a number one record.
If it was the Dave Clark Five, it'd be like, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But I think the thing with this song in particular, they stuck it at the end after all these covers that you just like.
You're kind of almost over the record.
Yeah, you're almost over it, and it's like if it was right after 8 Days a Week.
Yeah.
It may have just kind of...
Good point. The sequencing of it.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Because I usually, by the end, by about here, I turn the album off.
Yeah. If they would have flip-flubbed this and well, I know you love Babies in Black, but the this and, let's say, Rock and Roll Music, for example. Like, if it was number four on the album... You know, but that's just, it's like...
This album could have used a Rock and Roll Music type song on the back end, I think.
It could have.
Because it gets a little... Yeah. It's kind of mellow there in the back.
I will say, though, I don't want to spoil the party... That song has some of the best harmonies the Beatles have ever sang.
Oh, really? She makes me sad. I still love her.
But even the verse, I don't want, there's a kind of a lower Axl Rose. I don't want to spoil the parties all go.
Another darker tune.
What's that?
Kind of dark.
Yeah.
Another John song too, right?
With someone else.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to spoil the party. I'm just going to leave.
So, and I was thinking about this. I was thinking about this on the way here. Had they previously mentioned, like, because he talks about having a drink or two here in the song. And I was thinking, huh.
Interesting.
That's kind of ahead of the, like, you know, that's sensitive back then.
Yeah, good
to
call.
To talk about, like, drinking and or alcohol at all.
And also, too, I was going to bring this up, but I forgot. In Rock and Roll Music, they were drinking from a wooden cup. Something like that, which is like, that's moonshine. That's, you know, wooden. So there's two songs featuring some drinking.
You're starting to get the substances involved here.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you look at the movie Hard Day's Night, there's scenes of them smoking, drinking, you know what I mean?
I guess it was just more of the 60s.
But it was never overtly in the music.
In America, I think it was more, but in England, it was just accepted.
That might be a good point.
You'd see The Tonight Show, and they'd have Dean Martin come on with a drink and a cigarette, like, on the, as a guest.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Dean Martin wasn't being sold to kids the way the Beatles
were. Good point. But you're right, though. This could be one of the first, especially, I don't want to spoil the party, because he has had a drink or two, and I don't care.
Exactly.
He's actually saying, listen, we're drinking.
He's basically saying he's drunk, he's sad.
Right.
He's stuck in a bathroom
in New York City.
The girl I like. This is
nowhere to go. We'd be drinking and smoking if we want. Yeah. Poor John. Like, geez, man. Yeah. Cynthia must have been really treating him like shit.
Terrible.
Poor guy. And then a couple, you know, What You're Doing. I remember as a kid, I liked it because of the drum part at the beginning. And then it comes in with kind of that Birds type.
To your point, what you said earlier, you put this on any other album, any other band, incredible song.
Wait, but was this pre-Birds?
I think birds are kind of happening about now, aren't they?
I don't know, because this is definitely a 12-string Rickenbacker going on there. So I don't know when the birds actually hit. I thought that was later.
I would say 65 or 60, because Round Rubber Soul time, but they might have been existing at this point in time.
Maybe, yeah.
Because that guitar part is so birdsy.
Oh, down. Yeah, totally.
But like Sammy just said, any other album,
it's a great song.
Band, this might have been a huge hit.
Yeah.
Could it be so much to ask of you? That's a cool one.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely great, but it just doesn't hold up to like the standard of what you expect.
Of what we've heard, Heart
right, or Eight Days a Week on this album.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're right. And then close it up with the song that's not even on my iPod. If I'm flying, everybody's trying to be my baby.
Well,
it took some honey.
It's okay, from a tree. I guess.
But I would say, how do you dress up honey? Like, what are you doing? It took some honey from a tree. They dressed it up. They called it honey's viscous. It's not going to stay still for you to put a coat on it. You can't do that.
This was originally done by
Carl Perkins,
which his guitar style George kind of adapts to.
And it's the second Carl Perkins song on this record.
On this record, yeah.
Honey Don't.
Yeah.
So took some Honey Don't from a tree.
Right.
Dressed up and called to me. So overall thoughts of Everyone's Trying to Be My Baby?
I don't know.
Okay.
So George didn't write it then?
No.
Okay, he just sang it. Okay.
He loves Carl Perkins.
Carl Perkins is famous for Blue Suede Shoes. Yeah. That was his big hit.
Gotcha. So,
and guitar style.
Yeah, guitar style. Yeah, George is total Carl Perkins.
It's funny to me because those earlier Beatle records have a very twangy, Carl Perkins-y style to them. When did that stop?
I think once they started going into the Revolver, psychedelic, we can play souls backwards type stuff. What, basically when the drugs came in.
Right.
You know, that's kind of when they switched from a 50s, early 60s rock and roll band to becoming the Beatles.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You know? So favorite song on Beatles for Sale before we move on, and least favorite song?
I don't know.
I'm going to go with No Reply.
As your favorite, yeah.
Favorite? More than 8 days a week? It's tough because 8 days a week is the hit, you know? So
if I'm going to go for like a hit, I'll go for 8 days a week. But the deeper tracks,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's either No Reply.
And least favorite?
Does it have to be a cover or could it be
It's what's on the album. Something on the album.
Probably Mr. Moonlight for you,
probably
maybe.
Mr. Moonlight. Yeah.
Favorite for you?
Favorite for me, non-8 days a week, non-hit song, easily Babies in Black. But I'd put it neck and neck with, you know, 8 days a week if we're throwing in hits. Least favorite. I don't know. Mr. Moonlight, Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby. Those are just guaranteed skips when they come on my iPod.
Besides 8 days a week, I'm going with Charlie, No Reply. Although I have to give honorable mention to Every Little Thing due to it being on that mixtape for that girl. Yeah.
Least but man, favorite. I'll Follow the Sun gets an honorable mention for me too. Because well, that's
20, but least favorite for me.
It's hard. It's hard. Yeah.
Honey Don't. Just uninspired trap shit song. So
Honey Don't.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, so then we move on to Charlie's choice now, as I find it here, which was Magical Mystery Tour. And why did you choose this one, Charles?
It was always one of my favorites playing in the house when I was younger. And this one was an EP.
It started as an EP?
In England. It came out as an EP.
Oh, okay.
But the American version had more songs to it, so it became
An actual album now.
Yeah.
Because they used to do that quite a bit. They'd put out a version in the UK that was different from the version in the States, right?
Now this record was the one that completely freaked me out, too, besides Pepper.
Is this pre-Pepper? No, this is after Pepper.
Yeah, Pepper.
This is the Mystery sequel Tour. To Pepper. This is, in a lot of ways, I feel like
Pepper
this
and
is
Abbey Road.
Yes.
No.
According to the
This is the between the White Album.
Well, that's what I said. Oh no, I meant the White Album. I said the Beatles.
Wait a minute. It's
Pepper, Magical Mystery Tour, White Album. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And but then
Yellow Submarine.
Let It Be slash Abbey Road.
Yellow Submarine's in there somewhere too.
Right. Let It Be's in there, but. So, like you said, this is kind of the sequel to Pepper, And this is also after Brian Epstein died.
Correct.
Which is when Paul kind of took over the band.
Exactly. So he wanted to do this movie that no one was really into, but he pushed and pushed and pushed. And it's funny, on the anthology, you know, he wasn't bagging on the movie. And then he saves it by saying, where are you ever going to see a performance of Wars?
Oh, good call. Good call. Now, have you ever seen Magical Mystery Tour? Sam?
Yeah. It's not that good.
It's not good. It's just, it's very abstract.
It's wacky. You know, yes.
Again, yes. It's in very a Mike Strange,
I think, Pylon-y. Yes.
What's the cat you guys like? David Lynch type of weird.
I think it's strange just to be strange. It like, is. You know what I mean?
And it's also a perfect example of when a band is so big and no one's telling them no. Or no one's telling them this sucks. They're just like, do anything you want. Like, you know.
But you also have three guys in the band that were just at this point, okay, whatever. Paul wants to do it. Paul was trying to be this artsy type
guy. Right.
And there are moments in the movie that are pretty funny. The spaghetti.
It's a precursor to Mr. Creosote in Monty Python. Right?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Fat guy just eats until he explodes.
Yeah. Wafer thin.
Off, I'm full. It's wafer thin.
Yeah.
But this is kind of, it reminds me of that because John's like the cheesy waiter with the giant snow shovels full of spaghetti that he's given to the fat lady.
That's one of the only things I remember about the movie, honestly.
Well, there's a couple of scenes in there. The Fool on the Hill part, which I know.
Fool on the Hill stands out to me.
The
Walrus part
the
is
Walrus
great.
Walrus, Hello Goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
The bus ride.
Your mother should know.
Oh, yeah. I guess when you stop and add it up, it's kind of memorable.
The set pieces for the song. Songs, the videos, so to speak,
right?
The vignettes
are really good. The vignettes, it's right? Like, like The Wall. Like, watch The Wall as a movie. It's
exactly
confusing.
Yeah.
Or even what's that one Metallica did? The Through the Never. It doesn't really make sense until you actually see the performances, and then it's good. So maybe once again, pioneers.
Creators. But that Walrus video is awesome.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
I love the part when it kicks in and Paul points to Ringo, and Ringo goes. It's so heavy.
We'll get and they're all at some point wearing like Walrus costumes.
Right, that's the whole thing. The Walrus.
Walrus Paul.
Yeah.
Here's another clue for you all.
Yeah. Right. And Walrus Paul. You know, the cover of that record too is so crazy because who was who? You know?
Let's see. We're looking at the cover right now. You guys can go Google it right now on your devices.
I was looking at it a minute
ago.
I mean, we all know the Walrus is Paul.
Walrus is Paul. And there's like a guy with kind of, I think the guy with kind of the Muppet ears that looks kind of like a weird rabbit. I think that's George.
Yeah.
I think Ringo's the guy with kind of the fish mask.
Yeah. And John's in the center, or is that George?
I think John's over here with like this.
That's got to be Ringo on the far right there.
With the fish mask?
Yeah,
like the green mask,
whatever that is. Yeah.
Paul's the walrus. Ringo's he's the littlest. Fish mask guy. George is the rabbit, and John's the guy that looks like he's wearing something about a Game of Thrones on his head or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what that is. But
this record, to me, is such a Beatles record.
In what way?
Oh, man. Magical Mysteries Tour is such a great tune.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so heavy.
Yeah.
Three chords.
Yeah. Great tune. And when I saw Paul for the first time ever in 2002, he opened with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was just great. He walks on stage, waves. The least
spectacular entrance in rock and roll. The lights don't go off, nothing. He just walks on stage and starts playing.
I saw a less spectacular when I saw The Who last year, and Roger Daltrey walked on stage with glasses and a cup of tea.
Always.
Took a sip and went, all right then, I guess we can get started. With the cup of tea, it's
that's
like you drink it before you go on stage, dude, and they keep it for you.
Right? PG tips.
Yeah, that's right. So it kicks off, like we said, with Magical Mystery Tour. Great tune.
Now, this tune is just a rocker to me.
Yes.
Till the end.
With the kind of weird dream sequence out.
Jazzy.
That's a great point.
Just kind of ding, 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 dun, dun, ding, 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 boom, 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 boom. Just that.
And this is also the emergence of McCartney. Everything he plays is hot fire on bass. Every song, the bass playing is off its rocker.
And he explains why that was, because he was the last person to record on the tracks.
Really?
Yeah. So he had time
to... I didn't know that.
By design? Kind
of, that's the way it went.
Hmm.
If you ever read the Beatle book, track by track, I forget what it's called, by Mark Lewis. And it says Paul would come in and then put his bass parts down last. And so he had a chance to orchestrate.
Which is interesting, because it would be hard as a guitar player, rhythm guitar, to play to his rhythms, because his rhythms are so off the beaten path. So I can see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can see that.
He just had this cool way of playing, man. I don't know where he comes from.
Oh, I don't know, man. And just like, there'll be parts that don't really fit but make perfect sense, and even just little notes like.
Right, he would find a note.
Yeah. Just, Gene Simmons does that a lot. When we did the Kiss Cruise last year, I watched him do a live, and just watched him, and he does a lot of that. He's very McCartney influenced.
There are three bass players that I've always admired, and they come from English bands. And one is Paul McCartney, the other is John Deacon, and the other one is John Paul Jones. Mm. They find these notes that just completely complement the part.
Good point. Yeah,
it's like,
Whoa,
I would have never thought of
that. Yeah. You also got to throw in John Entwistle, too, the third John from Who, right?
But he was thunderous.
Yeah. So, Magical Mystery Tour, I love the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Sound effect. Any comments on Magical Mystery Tour, Sammy?
On the song itself, it's one of my favorites, I'd say, off this album. I don't know. That's actually kind of tough to say when you look at the track list thing. It's a pretty...
And once again...
Pretty banging album.
I was not... when you mentioned this, I'm like, oh, okay. And then he listened to it, and it's like, holy shit. This is great.
There's some classics.
Cheap Trick did a great cover of Magical Mystery Tour as well. And then it goes into The Fool on the Hill, which if I ever had the chance, I would forward this every time I hear it because I don't like how it starts. I like when it gets rolling, but it's just one of those songs for me. I just don't like the beginning.
This is very, very Paul. So Paul.
Very Paul.
So Paul.
Dreamy. So Paul, probably hated by the others.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah, with the flute on there. Like, once again, the Beatles, just any instrument they could find in the closet in Abbey Road, they would use it.
But I think this was Paul's bonding with George Martin. You know, George, I have this song. I want you to create the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And George Martin was like... Yes.
Yeah.
I will do that. No other Beatle plays on it, probably.
You're right. Do you think they relied on George quite a bit as the years went on to like?
I think Paul did.
What can you do?
Especially when you start getting into like Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour, when it's no longer just four guys playing their instruments. Right. You know, you're talking orchestration and you're talking a lot of moving parts. You would think the amount they rely on him had to. Go up around this time.
Which is funny because when Let It Be came out, Paul flipped out at all the production that Phil Spector put on. Hated it.
Right. I think the concept for that album was to get back to the roots,
Get back was to where it once belonged.
Right. They wanted to strip it down and just be rock and roll again.
And it also wasn't George Martin. I think it's George putting his spice on it, but who's this other asshole? You're not in our family, dude.
Right. Which is why Abbey Road was so good after.
Right. You know? Which we'll get to.
But bringing up the George Martin point that he was so important to the Beatles. Well, you have a song like Tomorrow Never Knows, and then John would say, I want to sound like I'm on a Tibetan mountain.
Yeah.
You know,
with a thousand monks chanting.
So I was like, all right, let me get that effect for you.
Yeah.
I think there's a pedal for that guitar center.
And like this almost, now you're talking about a really revolutionary time period, not only in the Beatles, but in music. And the Beatles were at the head of that with that had never been done. These effects that we now are so commonplace to us had never been done. And they didn't have Pro Tools and all these things to do these effects. You know, they had to figure out a way to do this.
I think they're recording on an 8-track, which they doubled to a 16-track, which they tripled to a 32-track. You know, they're basically just splicing it all down.
Right.
Yeah, bouncing everything, man.
And then talking about Trippy, they're flying. One of the only tunes written by all four Beatles.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And this was just, because I have like outtakes of this song. It's just called 12 Bar or something. Mm-hmm. I forget what it was. And it just sounds so dirty.
Yeah. I wonder what that effect is on the guitars.
I feel like, so this is instrumental. There's no lyrics on this, right? Is this the only instrumental Beatles song?
Is this the only Beatles instrument?
I think it might be.
Well, you have the end.
But that's...
No, there's some...
There's love you. And in the end.
Love you. And the ending.
No, but that's just one piece. It's just...
But the actual piece where that's in is called the end.
At the end of it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's not actually a standalone instrumental. This could be the only instrumental.
It's as close... minus flying. I think flying might be the only
Beatles
song.
Actual
ever.
Beatles song.
I think so.
And it's like, I think a minute long. It's 2:16, but there's got a lot of that weird...
Or like on an album. Yeah, I feel like maybe on the anthology or something, I remember hearing them do like a blues...
12-bar blues.
12-bar blues, right? There's no lyrics in that, I'm pretty sure,
But an official release.
Official release. I think this is the only instrumental. And it's cool. And I think, I want to say, I have this weird memory of, as a kid, an airline had this song in their commercial. So every time I hear it, I think of that.
Flying.
Yeah, of course, right?
Did they really?
Wow. Yeah.
Does Anthrax have any instrumentals? That was a big thing back
in the 80s. Yeah, we have
Which one?
Across the River.
Across the River. That's it, though, from the first album, right?
I think so.
There's no. You don't have any others. No, there's one in Persistence of Time. Belly of the Beast, or before that, is there a little...
Yeah.
Is that intro or is that an actual
it's
track?
An intro, yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So there you go. The first and only Beatles instrumental was leads into one of the creepiest Beatles songs, Blue Jay Way.
Wacky song, man.
Yeah.
Wacky.
I was telling Charlie, that song used to freak me out when I was a kid.
Sounds like he's underwater. How did they do that back then?
I don't know.
How did they do that?
It sounds like he's in a fog.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, like he's in... Like there's a fog upon LA, and then...
Yeah, very weird. So
I remember when I was old enough to start being allowed to stay at home by myself, I was a huge Beatles guy and drawing. I would always draw my own comics and stuff and put the Beatles on. And whenever this song came on, it would always creep me out to be in the house by myself.
Ah.
This and the other one was at the end of Sergeant Pepper when the needle goes, it goes, they did this thing to where the album never ends. It's like this laughing and these weird little... Those two things always freak me out the most.
The dog whistles on the...
Dog whistles in the back of that.
I remember one time we were talking about... we're playing the White Album on a road trip somewhere. We were listening to Helter Skelter, and we're talking about, you know, Charles Manson and all that. And it got, kind of creeped out. It was late at night, you know. The road's kind of scary. And then, how it kind of fades back in, yeah, right?
I got blisters on my fingers.
Right. Remember when the music started coming back in? We were all spooked, you know.
I just got this shirt. I was going to wear it today. It just says, I got blisters on my fingers. I found it online.
Oh, I love
that's
it.
Cool. That's cool. That's cool.
The thing with Blue Jay Way, too, I always love, songs that sound like... Like, for example, Hotel California on a dark desert highway. It just sounds like you're on a dark desert highway. Yeah. There's a fog upon LA. I'm standing in a fog in LA as I listen to this song.
Does this song have two different time signatures in it? And then Ringo kind of... Right? Then it goes back to that... Very strange.
Pretty complex, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Once again, very proggy before there was such a thing.
Right.
And for no other reason other than I think they were so good and so smart that they would do stuff like that just to keep themselves interested.
Yeah.
I feel part of what's interesting about the fact that you guys... We did Beatles for Sale and now this is because they're so... great for the exact opposite reasons. I feel like the early stuff is like kind of what I said earlier. It's this simple, very simple, you know, it takes genius to make something that simple but so good.
Yeah.
But then you get to Sergeant Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour and it's orchestration and it's bells and whistles this and that. So it's like they could do it all.
Right.
You know what I mean? They
could be great as a four-piece rock band or they could be great as a 64-track studio band.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Your Mother Should Know, which I believe John called one of Paul's granny music songs.
Yes, I would agree.
That's a good way to describe it, actually.
Yeah, you like it, yeah?
Another weird part in a song, you know, where it goes into that other section. It's like, where did that come from?
Yeah. Another weird...
And then it rocks again.
It is total, ragtime, dancehall music.
But I think, you know... The smart thing about McCartney is he could write some heavy shit, but he could also write stuff for the older, his dad type of music.
But it's also catchy, dude. A catchy song is a catchy song.
Lady Madonna is not...
Yeah.
Lady Madonna has a total different feel to it, but I feel it brings in that older...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it still rocks. It still rocks, though.
But it still rocks.
Yeah.
And also, on the other side of the coin, they would do a Yellow Submarine to bring the kids in.
Bring the kids in.
The kids love it. And a song we'll talk about later, Octopus's Garden. Like, those type of songs are so perfect for kids.
The introduction.
I feel like the Paul songs in this album just, like... stink of Paul, like Fool on the Hill, Penny Lane.
Good call.
You know, they just like, they like,
so
they're Paul. So yeah. Paul, it's insane. Right. Like, you know?
Yeah. Penny Lane was the single before.
Right. What happened was they had to fill this album up
because
with
it wasn't
actual
on
singles.
The EP.
Right. Strawberry Fields also.
Correct.
Oof.
Yeah, we're getting
Wait till there. We get yeah. to that one.
That's... Right. And then possibly, top five Beatles song for me of all time, I Am the Walrus.
Awesome.
I think this is the epitome of the psychedelic Beatles.
Yes. Everyone, you don't even need to be like a diehard Beatles fan. Everyone, you know, goo-goo-goo-choo. Like, this is wacky.
I want to say that I think when other artists heard this song, I think they just dropped everything.
Mm-hmm.
And were like, oh,
why bother?
Shit. Oh, crap.
We're screwed.
We're done.
But what's he talking about?
But it's
sitting on a cornflake.
It's a very.
What are you talking about, you weird man?
Like Salvatore Dali.
It's stream of consciousness lyrics.
Yeah.
Before too, where it doesn't really make sense. It's just cool visuals. You know, I remember The Cult had a song on Electric called Aphrodisiac Jacket, and there's a line, plastic, fantastic, lobster telephone. Means nothing.
Right.
But what a plastic, fantastic, lobster telephone. Like, it's fun to sing.
Yeah, there's a lot
of this stuff. You know,
it's very surrealist.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think of, like, we should actually do a lyrical reading of I Am the Walrus, just to go through.
But he was doing that. He was putting words with other words, not necessarily meaning.
No, just ones that sounded cool.
Very, another lyric in this song that I thought was maybe pretty subversive for the time was, you've been a naughty girl, you let your knickers down.
I thought,
whoa.
Yeah.
For 67?
That's kind of love. It's getting a little bit more.
They never came right out and said it in that time period. Right. Not in the music. The way they lived and what they did and what they said outside was one thing, but in the music, it was always protected.
I love the opening. I am he, as you are he, as you are me, and we are all together.
That's actually beautiful.
That's great.
That's poetry, man. That's great. Yeah. That's amazing. And then it gets a little weird. But that's beautiful.
On a cornflake waiting for the van to come, corporation t-shirt, stupid bloody Tuesday, man, you've been a naughty boy, you let your face grow long.
Yeah.
All of us have let our face grow long at this point.
Yeah.
He's growing a beard, right?
Yeah,
being sad, one of the two, I'm not sure. I like this one, is another good one too. See how they run like pigs from a gun.
Yeah.
It's similar to Pilchard sitting on the Eiffel
Tower. I still don't know what how they schnei means. I don't know what that is.
Crabble locker, fishwife, pornographic priestess. Boy, you've been a naughty girl. You let your knickers down.
Hey, and pornographic priestess. Like, you don't.
That's.
I'm telling you, heavy for that time.
Yellow matter custard.
There it is. Dripping from a dead dog's eye.
Like, that's terrible.
What is that?
I swear that was a horrible thing. Salvatore Dali thing.
I see.
With the yellow stuff dripping from his eye.
Yeah. Like you see like this liquid coming down from it. And also too, you talk about some of the greatest intros of all time, like where the band kicks in. I always think of Smells Like Teen Spirit. This one's like it too, goes da da da, and the bass is
this is the one that Paul points to him.
Yeah,
this is drumming on this song is great too.
It's a heavy tune.
Yeah, this is a great song.
On Creeping Death, that little trill that Cliff does to enter, it's very far in the background, but it's like this reminds you of that. So yeah, good stuff, great bass playing, great singing, and of course the classic. And people, it's not cuckoo ka-choo, it's goo goo ga-joob.
Right.
Get it right.
Yeah.
Please.
It does sound like cuckoo ka-choo, though.
Real Beatles fans would, it always bugs me when people do that.
And what's the thing that they're chanting?
Oompa, 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 everybody.
Stick it up your joompa. Everybody. What the hell?
Yeah. What does they say? Stick it up your joompa? What is it? I don't even know. It's like I said, there's so much stuff in there. And once again, it's the. George Martin, like, hey, George, what can you do with this?
This song is grand. It's just grand, you know?
Save your grandfather at the very end.
This is a... isn't this the one when he was playing around with the radio and there's a Laurence Olivier part?
There's a... Yeah, yes. These basically what they did.
Is that at the end? Yeah.
BBC Radio just went from station to station to station, and whatever they got is what they got. Here's the Mike Sam singers took part in the recording as well as variously singing... Ho 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 hee 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 ha ha ha.
Oh, that's right.
Oompa oompa, stick it up your jumper. Everybody's got one, and making a series of shrill whooping noises. And there you go. And founding Moody Blues member Ray Thomas said in an interview that he contributed backing vocals to the song.
There
so there you go. Oompa oompa, stick it up your jumper. That's great.
I never even knew that part. Actually, I never heard that. Stick it up your jumper.
And then another stinking of Paul, but at least in a rocking way. Hello Goodbye.
I was just thinking that when I was looking at that. I love Hello Goodbye.
And I remember.
I love it. It's so worldly sounding, you know.
Great ending. Great.
Yes.
And maybe the first video I can remember seeing.
Yes.
Where they're in the Pepper costumes, aren't they?
At the Savile Theater.
Oh yeah.
That's the one where Hendrix played.
Sergeant Pepper.
Oh, the day after it came out or something like that.
Very cool song. Also a song that was used in an airline commercial when I was a kid.
Hello, goodbye.
Yes. What the hell?
This is, I mean, what kind of airlines did you fly on, this, man?
I mean, I was a kid, but Magical Mystery Tour, I guess, you know, really spoke to the airline demographic, I guess.
There's another song where Paul's just in his...
Yeah.
And he's just writing these tunes that are just
spitting them out.
Beautiful.
This song's amazing.
Yeah. The guitar licks in these songs.
Yeah. Oh, it's great bass once again. Yeah. Oh, oh, no. And then, of course, the hey, la.
That's the
hey,
best. La, yeah. La,
la. I think that was a T-Mobile commercial.
Yeah.
How many?
Yeah.
Just using the beat of just the vocal, right? Anybody out there, how many Beatles songs have been used for commerce?
Yeah.
I'm sure they make...
Somebody should Google it.
Oh, my gosh. There's probably...
Your Twitter's going to blow up now.
Strawberry Fields Forever.
Probably the best song on this album.
It's up there.
It's got to be, right?
The only thing to me that's wrong with Strawberry Fields is not Day in the Life, but it's Son of Day in the Life. It's like...
That's a good point.
9.9 if Day in the Life is a 10.
Man, this is
right there.
I think they once asked George Martin, what are your favorite Beatles songs? And he said, this is his favorite John song.
Mm.
And I think his favorite, maybe I'm wrong about that.
Have
I feel
you
like,
ever heard the, sorry.
No, it's not important. Go ahead.
No, did you ever hear the evolution of this song?
It's on Anthology, right? From acoustic.
I vaguely remember that, yes.
I listen to the next part, and then it goes into what it became. So
if
amazing.
You ever, the one album that I got that I love was the Love soundtrack. Did you ever hear this?
Yeah. Where the remastered.
Like 90-minute nonstop Beatles thing. And the rule was they could use anything that was ever recorded by the Beatles. Doesn't have to be in the album, any tracks. And George Martin and his son Giles did it. And there's a lot of that acoustic Strawberry Fields
is
awesome. In there. It's so good.
Yeah, I've listened to that in a while.
One to another, and, yeah.
I don't know. This is the one Nobody, I Think, Is in My Tree.
Yeah.
I mean, it must be high or low.
Yeah. That's great. The way you put it like
and
that.
And it was
way.
A great video to this, too. Mm-hmm.
At the gates of actual Strawberry Fields as an orphanage.
I vaguely remember that.
And there's a Liverpool tour you can take. I'm sure you've taken. I've taken where you actually go to the gates and see Strawberry Fields on the wall. You know.
Yeah.
And you can also. Yes. And
the song is a masterpiece.
Yeah. But the video to this is very trippy, too.
Once again, it's not in Magical Mystery Tour, though, but it's a standalone video, right?
Yeah, and it was shown on, like, the David Frost Show and Ed
okay,
Sullivan.
Okay, yeah, right.
And they're very Sgt. Pepper-y, you know, walking through fields.
Yeah.
John, there's this one scene, they zoom into him, and he's just staring. It's just
very creepy, druggy. And then, once again, this
has kind of a creepy ending where it kind of comes back, right?
Well, and the famous... Ding, ding, ding.
I Buried Paul.
Yeah.
Also known as
Cranberry Sauce.
Cranberry Sauce.
Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, that's this song.
Yeah. This is the one. Yeah.
Oh. They said Cranberry Sauce, and that was one that people thought was I Buried Paul.
Yeah, he's dead. He's got to be dead.
And then it's got that weird.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is that?
And I swear there's two kick drums at the end of the song.
Oh, yeah. There's, you know what? I was going to mention that there is heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy drums on this.
Yeah.
It's almost like a solo.
It's pretty cool, this song.
Yeah, if you guys haven't heard this, listen to the end. And anybody goes, oh, Ringo Starr, there's some crazy drums on here at the end of this.
And
tune.
I think the instrumentation in this song, too, it's like they picked the perfect instruments for this song.
Yeah.
It's not just bass, drums, guitar.
No. It's the Mellotron.
It opens with that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Masterpiece tune.
And then something happens where it's like it just gets so heavy. Didn't they record this at a higher speed so it would play back heavier?
I think they record it higher.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
It went higher and then went slower.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Yeah. Right? And then it goes to another stinking of Paul. Great quote by Sami Zayn. Penny Lane. I'm not a fan.
I liked it.
This is one of my favorite top 10 Beatles songs.
What?
Really?
How could you not listen to this song and it doesn't kind of...
It takes you to Penny Lane.
And it cheers you up?
I don't know. I think I used to like it and I kind of grew out of it. Not one of my favorites.
Just the horn solo is just...
Oh, yeah, it was like a piccolo or something like that.
It's beautiful.
This is the Barber Shaves of the Customer. The Barber Shaves of the Customer. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like maybe it's one of those tunes like Pour Some Sugar on Me or Enter Sandman where I've heard it so many times that it get some
ideas. Maybe that's it.
He still plays it live.
It makes you feel like you're there.
Well, it's definitely a Dark Desert Highway
it
song.
It takes you back to Penny Lane, a place maybe where we all grew up in our own lives.
Good point.
And it brings you back to that time.
Yeah.
Which I think is great because John brought us back to Strawberry Fields, and he brings us.
And then Paul brings us to Penny Lane. You think that was on purpose?
What a contrast, though, right? Like John's version and Paul's version. What a contrast.
John's Liverpool, a lot different from Paul's.
Yeah, but it was also his Liverpool.
Yeah, good point.
You know, so Penny Lane always sticks out to me as one of the greatest top 10 songs of the Beatles.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Well, you made a good case because now I think.
Yeah, I kind of want to go back and listen to it now. Yeah.
Baby, You're a Rich Man.
Love it.
Great. Underrated.
Drenched in psychedelia.
Love it.
Love the weird Baby, You're a Rich Man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Makes sense.
Right. Keep putting all your money in it.
In a big brown bag
inside a zoo.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I love the beginning, too, of just the way it kicks in there. You know, how does it feel to be?
Yeah, with the bass playing.
And what is that weird? Is there a Mellotron in there, too? Probably. There's some weird stuff in the background.
That was probably the instrument of the time. Everything on the Mellotron.
Yeah, the Mellotron. But that just, I like the falsetto. How does it feel to be?
I love it.
This was
Army.
Yeah,
I feel this was the bridge going to the White Album
for John. Yeah. I agree, and I think Walrus was kind of a goodbye to the psychedelia.
Yeah,
and this actually, I almost would put Your Mother Should Know in there too because there's a lot of granny music on the White Album. There's a lot of granny music on the White Album, and then ending it off with All You Need Is Love, the classic tune. That they wrote.
Generation defining song, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I think it is.
Yeah.
And also, too, the last step in that psychedelia, lots of sound effects and radio stuff in the background and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. And George doing the lead that is reminiscent of the actual song.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then the big dun 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 dun.
Yeah, the big orchestration there.
And great lyrics, too. There's nothing you can do that can't be done. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung.
Yeah.
Like just
it's easy.
It's easy.
Yeah. What a great message. Too.
And
it kind of sums them up,
had
you know.
That message.
Like,
yes,
that's true.
And Ringo, to this day, it kind of gets on your nerves, but all he says is peace and love, peace and love, peace and love.
But
peace
it's
and love.
True, man. That was that, the, that really from
you know,
from I Want to Hold Your Hand till the end,
Good point. Even back in the day,
Love Me Do,
there was always ugliness in the world, but it just seemed that we had more love.
Yeah, well, it was the vibe of the country, Summer of Love.
Summer of Love.
I mean, we haven't had the Summer of Love since 1967. We could use the Summer of Love in 2017.
Oh, boy, could we.
Peace and love. Favorite song on Magical Mystery Tour and least favorite?
Ooh.
I'll go first. I'm going to go with I Am the Walrus.
I can't go for any of them.
And least favorite, I'll say Your Mother Should Know. Maybe Penny Lane, but then Charlie just made a good case for it. So
let's look at this track list.
It's hard to pick the one song on this record because there are so many gems.
Favorites?
There's so many classics.
Yeah, it's like a three-way tie for favorite for me. Strawberry Fields, Hello Goodbye, I Am the Walrus. How do you choose between those three? And they're back to back to back.
I know. It's one after another. And that's on the second side of the album.
Yeah, the second side actually kind of smokes the first side on this album.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, Flying is probably my least favorite.
Yeah,
it's a song.
Or even Blue Jay Way. It's not really my style.
That's a good call.
Yeah, it's a deep cut.
Yeah, exactly.
So. But, you know, I mean, Magical Mystery Tour, it kicks off and it just sets the tone for that record.
I would say I appreciate Strawberry Fields Forevermore, but I think I'd rather just listen to Hello Goodbye. You know,
that's the one you would.
I think so.
You had to choose.
I have more respect for Strawberry Fields Forever.
Okay,
but I enjoy listening to Hello Goodbye more.
Okay,
got it.
Interesting.
So, and Charlie's all of them you love.
Like I said, I love Penny Lane. I love Fields. How could I not?
It's hard to say. All right, so the last one in the pantheon of the three, Abbey Road, the classic
masterpiece.
We've discussed so much about it. It came out September 26th. 1969, and it was the last Beatles album recorded, but not the last one released.
Right.
Correct.
Let It Be was released after, but this came about. We all know the story that Let It Be was such a disaster.
Right.
Phil Spector came in; they hated each other. They wanted to do one more record, and George Martin said he would do it, but only if we do it the old way.
The old way.
just four guys in the room and let's bang this shit out and make it great. And
boy, did they.
To pick a worse song on this is going to be pretty much impossible.
Oof.
But to kick it off with Come Together, what do you say?
Now you go back to that simple genius, because what's going on in that song? Really not a lot.
Just a groove.
Just a groove. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
But I mean, what's actually musically transpiring is very, very... Boom, 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 boom. You know, very little's happening.
It's, well, yeah.
So little's happening, but it takes genius to make that as good as it was.
Once again, that drum beat by Ringo.
It's a very cool pattern.
It's a great pattern.
It's so cool. Yeah, it's so cool.
And what does he say? Shoot me?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah.
But isn't it sounds like Shoop. It's
a song that he wrote for, I want to say.
Wasn't it Revolution?
A candidate for some.
Really? I thought that
was Timothy O'Leary or something. Wasn't something
going together. I don't know. I'm not sure. I know that at one point he was sued by Chuck Berry because he used Here Come Old Flat Top, and that was a Chuck Berry lyric. And that's why I remember that album he did Rock and Roll, the cover album. He did three Chuck Berry songs. That was his payoff. Oh. He had to do three Chuck Berry songs.
That's funny. To get I didn't out know of that.
Three. Oh, well, you're right, Charlie. Come Together started as Lennon's attempt to write a song for Timothy Leary's campaign for governor of California.
That was it, yeah.
And of course, Timothy Leary is the father of LSD, so that's right. Probably why.
That's right.
I'll invent LSD.
No, but I mean, what a message again. Like, come together, you know?
Right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
Over me.
Yeah.
But
just unbelievable.
This album, too, the bass playing on this album, every song blows my mind. Like, if you're a bass player and you want to learn something
the tone,
hard,
too.
Learn
that tone on the record, too. It was the first time I thought that the Beatles really found that. Oh, that's a great bass tone.
This was their last one. They finally got it right. And then the first time maybe George has the best song on the record. Something.
Well, George has two great songs.
Great songs on this record.
I think...
This was a number one, right?
This was the Frank Sinatra song that he thought Lennon...
That's right.
best Lennon McCartney song ever. Right. Something.
I'm probably going to go out on a limb here, but this isn't one of my favorite Beatles songs.
Interesting. I prefer Here Comes the Sun.
Here Comes the Sun.
See, I think Something blows it away.
I skip over something.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, now do me a favor then. Next time you listen to it, don't skip it, but listen to nothing but the bass line.
Okay.
The bass line is
perfect.
Insane. Cool,
isn't it? Well, here's the two best things about the song for me is the bass line and the guitar solo.
Yeah.
I don't like the song, though.
Okay.
It's just...
Interesting. Oh, dude, I got to pull a Penny Lane in, and this one I disagree. And I think the melody of it, I think George is coming into his own, like just flowering out into this guy.
I agree with you.
It doesn't go a lot of places. Maybe is that what
but
it is for
so
you?
Much better that I don't know if it should have been second.
Okay,
Part of that was them throwing him a bone.
I think
right?
part of that was him taking the bone and going, "Listen, this."
But he starts
kicks
upside
ass.
Too, though.
Well, because I think I remember reading something about John was saying like, "Oh, he's been held back all these years and yada yada." You know.
I think the fact that All Things Must Pass came out like 2 months after this as a triple album, he had so many great songs.
Right? Like, I've been waiting!
And then another one of Paul's granny music songs, Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
Love it.
Do ya? Very critically derived. People hate this.
It's kind of dark when you really listen to the lyrics, song. Right?
It's granny music
serial killer
lyrics.
Yeah, it's really insane. Not one of my favorites.
She turns her back on the boy. He creeps up from behind.
Like, la, 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 killing someone. La, la, la. You know?
And also, too, the instrument of this album is the Moog synthesizer.
Oh, yeah.
It's all over this album.
It's all over the place.
I was going Andy Moog from the Edmonton Oilers. You pronounce
Moog.
Moog. Moog. Your musician
Moog. Andy Moog.
So, yeah, this song has a Moog solo in it. There's a lot of Moog synthesizer in this, and apparently he wrote this song around that. And also, too, Ringo says this was the hardest song they ever tracked was Maxwell's.
Is that right?
It's because Paul wouldn't give it up. He wouldn't. This is when John got hurt in his car crash. So it was just the three of them, and he wouldn't give it up. And they had to track it every day.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Ringo's like, I don't know why we're spending so much time on this piece of shit song, but I'll do it if you want. It's not a single, you know.
Yeah.
So and they actually had an actual anvil to hit the thing on.
Oh, that's funny.
And then, Oh Darling.
As you know. My favorite Beatles song.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite Beatles song.
And this guy loses it. Like, he you can see he dances. He dances to it. He sings along.
When we put it on the bus that one time, right? I just can't believe this song.
The feeling, the emotion.
This song could, to me, okay, you know how I keep saying, like, okay, there's the simple Beatles, it's really genius and simple, but then there's also the complex. This song, I feel like, is both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's a lot of complexity to it, but it's still quite like
it's a doo-wop, it's like a 50s.
Oh, I love it. And the singing, yeah. Oh my god,
yeah, he blew his voice out. If
Paul singing on this, going back to Yellow Matter Custard, I don't know who sings on that one. But before
the band Yellow Matter.
Yeah, Yellow Matter.
Neil Morse.
That's right. So when he's like, oh boy, here we go. Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, kills it.
You know, it's
because you owe it to the song. You know what I mean? You gotta go big on this song. It's just so.
My cousin was in a cover band. He's like, yeah, we're gonna do Old Darling. I'm like, who's singing it? Yeah. So this guy, I'm like, dude, don't even bother. Sing it like that. Stop it. If Twist and Shout is John's throat-ripping vocal,
this has to be Paul's. Especially the very, very last one.
Oh, yeah. Nev, do you know
that man?
He left it on the.
And doing a little research, John said that he said I should have sang that. It's my style more than Paul's. But on this song,
dude,
Paul kills it.
Paul's very versatile, and you know, you think Paul and. We're kind of joking about, like, oh, the granny sound or the, like, you know.
Yeah.
But, man, Paul, when he wanted to.
Dude, he'd throw Helter Skelter.
He could rip it up, man. He could do it all.
Yeah, exactly.
He could do it all.
And I think that's another reason why at this point it was the end, because John was sick of it. He's Stuart Copeland. You know, Sting had become the boss. Paul had become the boss. And it eclipsed him as a musician and everything else and couldn't take it, you know. Octopus's Garden. I think this song alone is why Ringo should be in the Hall of Fame, besides his drumming. He wrote it.
Yeah. With a little help from George, right?
A little help with George, even though George took no credit.
Right.
It's credit just to Ringo Starr, to Richard Starkey.
Right.
Yeah.
But everyone knows this song.
Everybody knows this song.
It's a great song.
So if you have written one song in the world that everyone knows, that's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's true.
I think you should win on that one.
I like this song. It's cute.
Yeah. It's a more sophisticated Yellow Submarine, yes. Almost like the sequel to Yellow Submarine.
Absolutely.
But it's his and it's more sophisticated, yeah. You know.
And also going back to your Blue Jay Way, total underground singing. Sounds like they're under the water, like how they did that effect.
Yeah.
Not sure.
That's great when you talk about, you know, Hotel California, right? This song feels like you're underwater.
Yeah.
You feel
they created a vibe.
They created an atmosphere.
And if you've ever seen Love, Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, it's awesome.
This is the centerpiece of the show. Because, yeah. I mean, just imagine, you know, Cirque du Soleil's visual.
Right.
Octopus's Garden. They build a legit Octopus's
That's
Garden.
That's true, man. It's incredible.
Great. It's such a great
centerpiece. They create that atmosphere just with the music. It's really something.
Then for me, what might be my favorite Beatles song is I Want You, She's So Heavy.
Right. We discussed this. Great line by Jericho. This is Black Sabbath before Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath before Black Sabbath. Once again, this is a heavy, heavy tune. It's a little bit trippy, like some of those early Sabbath tunes. But this, to me, is the epitome of what the Beatles can do. It's simplistic. It's tough. It's progressive.
Yeah.
It's the singing is great. The bass playing is great. There's tempo changes. There's weird salsa mixed parts in there. You know, like
this is your version of like Oh Darling for me, where it's the all-encompassing Beatles. This is what the Beatles are about.
Yeah, and I'll take one step for this album.
Yeah.
Desert Island, this is my Beatles Desert Island records. This is what the Beatles are all about.
I think so.
Yeah. You know? But they nailed it.
You did make a point. There's I always felt there's this Police song that's called Driven to Tears.
Yes.
That is very reminiscent of a part of the song when it kicks back and says doom 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 doom. It just reminds me of that.
It does.
This song to me could go on and on and on, just that.
It just cuts. And that's because John said cut it here.
Yeah.
Mid-thing. And once again, Moog all over this damn thing. And then
I love that it's like, what, 7 minutes, 42 seconds?
47 seconds.
Right. It's so long, and even though it's 7 minutes, 40 seconds, it just ends.
Yeah.
It's so abrupt,
but
you know?
It's just going. It's like that riff.
Down, down, down.
It's so heavy.
It's so heavy. It's heavy metal. This is heavy metal before heavy metal. It totally is.
It's like she's, it's so heavy.
You could, you could put like church bells in a bong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, King Diamond could cover this and it would work.
It's awesome.
I just, the only, yeah, I mean, just.
You actually got me to reevaluate my my position on the song, because I kind of liked it, but I was like, 7 minutes, 42 seconds. Whatever. Then after you sold me on this, I re-listened to it, and I was like, man, this is something.
And the bass playing too, bing, ding, ding, bing, ding, ding. That's a little weird little thing in there. Awesome, like, even if you're like a Billy Sheehan guy, you're going to have to try that and figure that out, because it's not easy. So now let's go to the second side. Let me ask you guys a question. Does the medley start? Well, here comes the sun kicks off side two.
Best song.
Best George song, ever, right?
Ever, yes. Of all time.
Oh, okay.
I'm best George Beatles song, I think, too.
This song has everything about it that is just a hit.
It's wonderful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
That's a good call. A beautiful song.
It's a beautiful song.
It's like the sun comes up.
Here comes, you know.
And they all participate and they all do a great job on it.
Yeah, they're all playing on it.
This is a George song. Yeah. Let's
and it's a very much a Beatles song, again, tying into the love and the optimism and, like, you know, and also the spirit of the band at the time. They knew this was their last record. They knew this is the end.
And it's such an upbeat song because you would figure a lot of the songs would be kind of depressing.
This is the opposite of that. Most of these songs are very, and I think too, George,
I think it was the weight of the world was off their shoulders at this point. They saw the finish
line. Right. And I think George too, as a singer, really comes in. Like, George has a great voice. I don't think he really had a great voice up until the last couple of records, where it became George's voice.
Right. He came into his own
personality. He's in between.
His confidence.
That's right. He's not Paul or John, but he's not Ringo either. He had a good kind of middle ground of that. Like you said, the confidence of it. So let me ask this: does the medley start with "Because"? Or does it start with "You Never Give Me Your Money"? Or does
I think it starts with "You Never Give Me Your Money"?
Is that when you think it starts?
Okay. I don't know, it's money spent. Because I don't think it goes with it, but it all works.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so.
But I think officially, though, they've officially said the medley starts at a certain point. What do you got, Sammy?
I was going to say "You Never Give Me Your Money" kind of is a standalone song, but then it's revisited in the medley.
It's revisited later on.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a standalone song. Right.
So I would say it's...
I feel like "Because" is its own thing. "You Never Give Me Your Money" is its own thing. And then it really kind of starts... For me, I always acquaint it with...
Sun King in there, too.
Well, Sun King's... For me, it's always been "Mean Mr. Mustard's" where it starts.
On Wikipedia, and I agree, but on Wikipedia, they officially say... And then, of course, Wikipedia, everything is true. But they officially say the medley starts with "You Never Give Me Your Money."
I would agree with that.
But it's...
But Sun King is kind of a standalone song.
I agree. But let's go back to "Because," first of all. Weird song, basically a cappella. Great acapella. Singing.
Very Beach Boys kind of influence.
What, Sun King?
No, "Because."
Oh, "Because." Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, yes.
Dark.
"It Turns Me
Very Beach Boys.
Which, by the way, this started the Love soundtrack, was this. This is how it
That's
started.
Right.
Correct.
Great.
Oh, only a cappella, right?
Yes.
Yes.
But I believe this whole song is a cappella.
But I hear a lot of the Beach Boy influence, especially on this song.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Big time.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Really Sgt. Pepper.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I didn't like the song when I was a kid because there was no beat to it. But as a you know, adult, the harmonies on this are
the harmonies.
Yes,
incredible.
Right.
Incredible.
That's exactly how I would put my take on it.
Right.
It wasn't.
It's not a song. You'd actually have to get up.
This is for you guys, like the musicians. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
it's beautiful with headphones on. It's just beautiful to hear their voices, the way they work together, the way they used to work.
Yeah.
And it's like,
what Charlie just did, which was funny, is that you have to get up and pick up the needle and move it to the next track.
Yeah.
It wasn't just pushing a button.
Yeah,
so you're
right.
Okay, is it worth it for me to listen to this for the next 2 minutes and 20 seconds, or should I just get up and move it?
Yeah.
You know. Okay, so "You Never Give Your Money."
Great song.
Great tune.
Yeah. Perfect. Very Paul.
Yeah.
Again, very Paul, but great. But great, yeah.
And then
out of college, money spent.
That's what Paul. He almost talks like this.
Yeah, it's like old-timey.
Admiral Halsey voice.
But doesn't this song kind of... here's another thing. The part in "A Day in the Life," the Paul section.
Yeah.
This be in this song?
Yeah.
Yes, great point.
Right?
You're right.
It's the same. Then, you're right.
Out of college.
You're right. Yeah. You're right.
That was part of the medley.
You're right. You're totally right.
The great parts in this too, like, we're going, "Oh, that magic."
Oh, that feeling.
"One sweet dream."
Yeah,
and it came true.
And the guitar
today.
That goes with it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's a great song. And it takes, you know what I love about that song? It takes you on a trip.
Good.
It's a ride.
Absolutely.
That song is a ride.
Again,
man.
What like almost like a band on the run, three or four songs.
Agreed.
In one.
It probably was.
Yes.
You know,
what a great
precursor.
But that, when his voice gets real heavy,
yeah,
you know,
I forgot how heavy that
is. It's awesome. It's an awesome song.
Got the car on the
mic. Yeah, yeah.
Wow, what a tune.
I want to listen. I can't wait to listen to the song after the podcast.
But then it goes
now
into that section, which I was saying before, but oh, that magic. But the guitar behind it,
yeah,
which is Paul.
Oh, okay, right.
You
right
know. It's just awesome.
And then into Sun King, which is not a favorite of mine.
Not a favorite of mine.
Yeah. Which is not a favorite of mine either.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think
I don't know where it fits. I don't know where it fits in this.
Right. I almost think they could have.
This album's as close to perfect as it gets, but this is one of the few, like, I think, black eyes on it.
And I'll tell you when
blemish
when they lose me, when they start singing in Spanish.
Well, yeah.
That's what I'm like. Come on,
I don't get it.
Cuanto ale mucho. I'm thinking this is John. And I'm just waiting for this is definitely get up. This is worth walking across the room, picking up
bathroom break. True. It's like the crappy bridge between this awesome album and You Never Give Me Your Money and then this horrible little song and then this wonderful medley.
One little, if we can just get past Sun King,
yeah,
we get to the medley. This is to me where the medley starts with Mean Mr. Mustard.
For me, yes.
Which, coupled with Pauline Pam, these two weird characters that was like from Yellow Submarine or something like this, but dirty old, like a dirty old man. What's like a dirty song?
Yeah, yeah.
Such a dirty old man.
Yeah.
It's like pre Aqualung.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just running down his nose.
Yeah. But I love this song.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the way it intros.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
So then it goes into Pauline Pam.
Which is a moving little number, right? It moves.
Which
it
could
moves
have been
you
on the White Album, I think.
I agree. Yeah. And she's so good looking that she looks like a man.
Yeah.
Once again, baby or a rich man.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely Rita.
Lovely Rita,
yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Was Her Majesty in between Mustard and Pauline or between Pauline and She Came Into the Bathroom Window originally?
Her Majesty, no.
Yeah.
So Her Majesty, they ended up placing obviously after the end.
But there's a section missing.
It's Majesty.
But it was meant to be.
I have the whole thing, that whole.
The original one?
Yeah.
Charlie's got all the.
It starts with dun.
Her Majesty was originally between Mean Mr. Mustard and Pauline Pam.
Wow.
Because you can hear that last power chord.
Yeah.
So then she came into the bathroom window. Great tune.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Great tune.
Amazing song.
About the apple scruffs.
I also calculated it. He says she worked at 15 clubs a day. I said, that's impossible. And I did the math. I go, there's no way.
How is it no way?
There's just no way. Like 15 clubs a day. How could she, how long is she working at these clubs? Half an hour? An hour? Is she working a 15-hour day? She's not just going up there and doing one little.
Hey, what kind of club? Is she a stripper?
Yeah. She said she'd always been a dancer. Oh. She worked at 15 clubs a day.
Oh, yeah, it's important.
I always thought it was a stripper. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, there could be a little area in town
maybe
that she could just jump from.
But come on. Who is this broad?
Maybe.
What is this?
Listen, this funny thing is, listen. a little shout out to Frankie. I lived on the Reaper Bond when I wrestled in Hamburg for 6 weeks, and there was about 15 or 20 strip clubs all within. They played in Hamburg. Maybe he did know a girl
who would do a
half-hour set,
yeah,
go to the next one, and she's all wired up on the meth. Yeah,
Seven and a half hour, 8 hour working day.
Maybe she could do it. If she was that in demand.
But what does he say? She worked at 15 clubs a day.
And though I thought I knew the answer. She,
but I did, but she would not say.
Right. Didn't anybody tell her?
Yeah.
Sunday's on the road to Monday.
You ever heard the Joe Cocker? I'm sure you've heard the Joe Cocker cover.
Of this
great.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah. We could go into that too. Who did the greatest Beatle?
Oh, that's a horror song. Right. Oh, jeez, man.
A little help from my friends. It was.
Yeah, Cocker did that,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. He took that to a great new place. Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's not good, but for 80s metal guys, Motley Crue, Helter Skelter was one that everyone knew.
Yeah.
It's not a great version of it, but for kids, metal kids that took the Beatles to that era.
Yeah.
You know, you knew who the Beatles were.
Joe Cocker, I think, did the best one.
I'd say so, too.
I love his rearrangement of Little Help for My Friends. The way he reconfigured.
Totally different.
And then goes into Golden Slumbers.
Beautiful.
Oof,
this
beautiful.
Song.
Dripping of Paul.
But there's some balls. Way. There's some balls in this one, too. Like when he first, you know, smiles awake.
Yeah.
When you rise.
Good vocal performance.
Yeah, that's a beautiful song. I wish it was longer.
Me, too. Great orchestra.
Beautiful.
George Martin arranged this.
And then the way it goes into Carrie that way, the way it transitions is.
There's a couple tunes in this that I wish were longer.
Me too.
I think Polythene Pam could have been a
Golden Slumbers
type rocker as well.
She Came In Through the Bathroom Window should have been longer.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Golden Slumbers and Carry That Weight. Yeah. You could give me two more minutes on each of those songs.
You're right. You're right. Carry That Weight. Once again, this is the...
So I heard one of the few Beatles songs to have harmonies from all four members.
Carry That Weight. Well, Carry That Weight. Listed here, once again, on Wikipedia, we don't know if it's true or not, as McCartney, Lennon, Harrison, and Starr.
Right.
Which would be the only other song besides Flying that got all four.
Right. And it's I think vocal harmony is the only one of all four. I think. Not sure if it's the only one, but it's one of the only ones.
I think I can hear Ringo in the background. Gonna carry that weight.
Kind of, I think so, too.
I think you can hear that. Carry that weight. You know they're giving him the low harmony.
Yeah, right. Like you didn't really, I feel like you didn't really get songs like that back then that had like this booming, you know.
Just the anthem.
Yes, a very, very anthem. Yeah, yes, yes.
And then it goes into the ripper of the end. Once again,
perfect.
The epitome of
perfect.
The Beatles.
So I think Paul really gets it, you know, and like this is how the Beatles should end, because Paul, this is Paul's kind of arrangement, right? The end. It's a Paul song.
He wrote it,
right? And it's so like, how do you write the last Beatles song ever? How do you have this all-encompassing thing? Well. You know, the three solos bleeding into each other. And I heard, I don't know if this
is true, but the drum solo,
Ringo didn't want to do a drum solo. Right. So they actually played music over it. Then they pulled the music off. But everybody's got their shine. And this is what the Beatles are.
Great
this is
vocals.
How we play. And this is our message.
Good,
boom.
Good call,
one
man.
perfect line to sum up the Beatles.
The line sums it up.
I have goosebumps. That line is the Beatles. That song is the Beatles.
And in the end... The love you take is equal to the love you make. And that's life.
That is life. That is poetry. That is magic.
That comes from Confucius or Jesus or Allah. Or that comes from Paul McCartney.
Let me tell you one hilarious thing I read. Because, you know, like, so Paul and John, like, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Right? But I remember reading this interview or maybe seeing this interview where John is kind of like, oh, yeah, Paul did a great job with the end. He had some great line in there. It showed that Paul could write something good when he wanted to, right? Like, or he could write something deeper.
When
he wants to write something profound, he can. Like, he had this great line in that song about something about the love you put in is what you get back. Like, he didn't even know it, and it's the most iconic,
right.
The most iconic line ever. And he's kind of paraphrasing loosely, like, something about giving what you get. I don't know. It was pretty good, though. Like, we're talking about 40 years, 50 years later. He's, something like that. I don't know. It was perfect, man.
The vocal end is great too. You know. Oh yeah! All right. Yeah.
Are you gonna be in my dreams?
Tonight.
Yeah.
And then I love the love you, love you,
dude. It's a fucking masterpiece. There's no other way to put it.
And that's a Paul lead that comes right in.
Well, it goes to Paul, to George, to Lennon.
And I love that you could, like, you hear their personalities in the solos,
great
man.
Point.
You hear it. You know. Yeah, that's yeah,
Paul,
right?
Paul
that's John,
in.
Right? Like, just wow.
Paul comes in with the shredder.
Yeah.
George does George, and then Lennon's just playing basic rhythms. Yeah. Izzy Stradlin, like,
yeah. It's choppy. Wow. It's choppy. It's aggressive.
Hitting, and they're all great solos in their right. What do you think, Charlie?
I agree.
I mean, just
it's the perfect ending.
Very sad ending to a whole thing.
Too. As far as
just
the fact that
thing.
It's over,
it comes. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's done.
You know what I also love about it too, and it's 26 seconds, but it's such a heavy ending. It is so heavy, and that's what the Beatles are all about. And you almost want to cry.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, there's this stupid little.
I know, but I love Her Majesty.
But that's what I love.
But I love that. I wish it wasn't there because the end is perfect.
But I also love the fact they did put it there. Like, listen, guys. It's only rock and roll.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a great point.
She doesn't have a lot to say. So yeah. Like you said, that's what a heavy way to end. But the Beatles also had a sense of humor.
That's right.
Like no other band.
That's right.
So to drop that at the end, it's like, guys, like I said,
yeah,
it's okay.
It's over.
It's
but still,
be all right.
It's over. She's a pretty nice girl. But you know,
and of course, Paul has to have the last word.
But it's great, isn't it? And even the way Her Majesty ends, like, there's another note because it was supposed to be it was supposed to be part of the
it's
so abrupt.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, the Beatles are done.
it starts with the chord from Polythene Pam.
Right.
But she's a very nice girl. Boom, boom.
Yeah, that's how it is. Bum, bum.
But I mean, Sammy, I think you just put the key on that of being the ultimate way for the Beatles to end. If you could actually write your own obituary, like, wow,
it's flawless, man.
What a great point on that. And
and like, credit to Paul, because how do you do that? You know, yeah. how do you take this 8-year career that transformed the world, yeah, transferred the music, and sum it all up in one song? And yeah, he did.
Sum
perfectly.
All up in 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
Perfectly.
Yeah, perfect way to do
perfectly.
It.
Perfectly.
God, I got goosebumps.
I wonder if he was even writing with John at that time.
I think they're all kind of doing their own. Although this record, they wanted to get back to the old way.
I mean, because you see pictures of them sitting.
Well, they did Don't Let Me Down, and they did, you know, those were like, you know, I think that's a total John.
This is the weird thing about it, because you see pictures of them at the time hanging together and stuff, and then you see Paul plays on the Ballad of John and Yoko.
Right.
So they were still like, you know, hey, let's do this.
They still showed up for work.
Yeah. Right.
They might not have liked each other, but it's like, we got a session.
But they still hung out
there
a bunch after the fact. The Beatles were broken up.
They did.
Right?
Yes and no, I think.
I think in 75, they started getting together more than people knew. I think once kind of the...
Because I remember hearing this thing where one time Lorne Michaels on Saturday Night Live offered 10 grand for the Beatles to show up.
It was three grand.
Divided by four.
Eric Idle.
But
George goes, that's pretty chintzy.
But apparently John and Paul were watching together at the time. We're like, hey, should we go?
That's the
and
rumor
they didn't go,
that
right.
I've never heard.
Well, there was that weekend that they actually did some stuff.
They did
in LA.
They were in LA all drunk. There's actually a bootleg out there of John and Paul and who else is it? Like Gene Vincent.
Harry Nilsson.
Harry Nilsson.
And that was another thing. Nilsson was very influential on those Beatles at the latter part of the Beatles. And I think he would have been the guy that might have got them together.
I think to this day that they would have got back together. I think George would have been the guy that was the problem. I think at that point he might not want to
do his own thing.
I think Lennon and McCartney would have done it for sure.
I think, I don't know. I think George would have, you know, everybody thinks that. I think George had the best, I think he was the most humorous of the band. He got comedy.
Yes.
Don't forget, he paid for the Ruddles to be filmed.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is one of the greatest.
And Time Bandits.
And Time Bandits.
And a lot of, he had something to do with a lot of that Monty Python stuff. Life of Brian.
Yeah. He was in touch with the Pythons very
right,
closely.
Right.
He had the humor.
And he financed a lot of what became the Ruddles with Eric Idle.
They
funniest.
I agree. And they would have done something, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think they would have done something.
Final favorite song, least favorite song. I think we can all agree Sun King wins for all three of us.
the black eye on the Beatles history that is known as the Sun King.
And you know, here's the thing. We hated Mr. Moonlight. Now we hate Sun King.
Yeah. That's funny.
There's a pattern going on.
Yeah.
We hate
quit with the celestial
the
stuff, would you? All right.
Yeah. Best tune? I mean, can you even try?
For me, it's Oh Darling, just what's because of the man. Yeah.
Man,
it's
that's
so
too
good.
Too hard to.
I'm gonna go.
Come together. Honorable mention there.
I'm gonna go.
You
never give me your money, just because I'm super excited about listening to it again.
It's
right,
great
now.
Song.
It just depends what day it is, right?
But you know, Here Comes the Sun. I Want You.
Yeah,
all these songs.
They're
just
all great. They're all great.
It's amazing.
It's got.
They're
I think personally, I think their best album, like front to back, complete album.
It's
just
my,
masterpiece.
It's my
you know,
Island. It's album for
it's,
sure.
I never really considered to be their best album. I would say it's their best album for 1969. How could you say it's better than Pepper? How could you say it's better than
Good
I point.
Guess
Revolver?
Yeah, I guess. Point. I guess for what I like of the Beatles, for what my
strong
right.
Yeah, you know,
a lot of people argue Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah,
I think for me, I'm more of a Abbey Road guy. It's just. If it's a personal thing. Just like, are you a George guy, Paul
sure,
guy,
sure,
John?
Sure.
This is the same thing.
Some days I'll go through a White Album phase, right? Take
me
that
too.
One.
Yeah.
That last time. So, I think it just depends what day it is.
By the way, I know you guys already did the White Album, but are you of the opinion you shrink that down to one album?
No.
Best ever?
No.
Oh, the best.
Did you cut some of the fat on that?
I don't know what songs you put on there, because to me, they're all really good in different ways, except for Revolution Number 9, which is still a pioneering song.
Which is definitely.
If you're going
yeah, but come on.
I would say the worst song.
But fine. You tried something new, but it's still shit. Come on. You know, come on.
It's still shit.
Yeah.
I couldn't put it down to one album.
I couldn't either. I couldn't either.
But there's moments that I was like, I don't like it. Like,
if I had to choose the 10 best songs,
I don't need Bungalow Bill. I gotta be honest. I don't need that. You can get rid of it,
David.
Yeah.
Do we really need Rocky Raccoon on this thing?
I love Rocky Raccoon. No, Rocky Raccoon has to stay.
He makes it.
Is it Buffalo Bill or Bungalow Bill?
Bungalow Bill.
Yeah.
Yoko appears on that.
She does.
He looks so fierce.
Dudes, what a great time. All right, that was fun. Great time. Beatles,
thank you.
Bonante 3.
Hey, just so you know, I had a media call with 24 outlets overseas, and they've been waiting for a half hour because I had to do this podcast. So my priorities are in order here, people.
Like blowing up. We were going to touch on a Stones thing.
We got to do Stones podcast next time.
Stones 67 to 72.
The Mick Taylor years, I said.
Mick Taylor years.
That'll be our next one, unless we can finally get Portnoy, in which case we'll do Beatles Bonante Part 3, and we got a bunch more albums to do. So plenty more to come.
Yes.
Thank you very much for having me, fellas.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Anyone who knows us, I'm the one that never speaks, so I'd just like to say thanks a lot.
All right, thanks to Charlie from Anthrax. They are currently on tour with Slayer, and Sami Zayn from the WWE, currently on tour around the world, for weighing in on the Beatles. We are trying to get a podcast about the Rolling Stones happening, but like you heard, we're going to focus on the Mick Taylor years. So many ideas and thoughts about great rock and roll. We're getting it on here on Talk is Jericho. You know where else you can get your rock on and your wrestling on and your rage on? How about the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, setting sail October 27th from Miami to the Bahamas. Remember, for as little as $150, you can hold your cabin. And once you book it, everything is included in the booking price. All the food, all the activities, all the live podcasts, stand-up comedy shows, meet and greets, concerts, the chance to see Kenny Omega in the ring, the chance to see Corey Taylor in concert, the chance to see Craig Gass doing comedy, the chance to see Killing the Town live. All of these things covered in the price of your cabin. The only things you pay for on the ship are drinking and gambling. If you don't drink, you don't gamble. You don't spend anything else because food is included. And plus, what else is included? All meet and greets and signings, all the shows featuring all of these incredible guests, including Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Raven, Noel Foley, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, coming back to New Japan on June 9th at Osaka Dominion, New Japan. I'll be there versus Naito. Cyrus and Paul Lazenby from Killing the Town. Paul Lazenby has replaced Lance Storm as the co-host of Killing the Town. Go check that out on Podcast One now. It's better than ever. Pat Patterson will be leading Karaoke Nights, Hall of Famer in the WWE. The Keeping It 100 crew, Conan, Disco Inferno, Shane Helms, JoJo the Twink Boy, the Philly Twink Boy will be there. Beyond the Darkness, Dave and Tim telling some scary tales. Dave was great last week on the Art Bell tribute show. Check it out right here in Westwood One. Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show. That's a funny thing. Brad Williams is a funny thing. Ron Funches is a funny thing. The aforementioned Craig Gass is funny. Sal and Q from Impractical Jokers will be there. Busted Open Radio, Dave LaGreca, Corey Taylor from Slipknot and Stone Sour will be performing. Ozzy will be playing both of our top 10 hits, I guarantee that, Judas and Painless, and there's maybe even a third one on the way. Phil Campbell, the Bastard Sons, straight out of Motorhead, straight onto the cruise. King, the Stir from Atlanta, Georgia. Dave Spivak Project from Calgary, Alberta. The Cherry Bombs, the Darlings of Rock and Roll. Shoot to Thrill, the world's greatest AC/DC cover band, they're female. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's greatest Ozzy cover band, they're male. And of course, the Ring of Honor, presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be wrestling. The Young Bucks, the villain Marty Scurll, Cody, don't call him, Rhodes, Adam Page, that's the entire Bullet Club, will be there. Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Cheeburger, 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 Mandy Leon, Brandy Rhodes, Kelly Klein, Matt Taven, Flip Gordon, Delirious, Kenny King, Silas Young, the Beer City Bruiser, the Dogs are going to be there. So many amazing performers are going to be there. Chris Jericho's Words of Jericho, you'll see that live on the cruise. You're going to see it live also in Glasgow, Manchester, and London, May 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Still a few tickets left for Glasgow and London. Not many. I believe that's insidetheropes.co.uk or something. Just Google it. Inside the Ropes, you'll find it. Lots of great stuff coming up. Remember, the Judas Rising Tour, go to FozzyRock.com. I'll start listing all the dates for that. ChrisJerichoCruise.com for all information on cabins. Go book your cabin now. Be a part of history, the inaugural, and it won't be the last. Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, the Regatta of Wrestling. It's going to be happening. It's going to be huge. It's going to be amazing. Speaking of amazing, coming up on Wednesday,
Freak Show Wrestling is going to be here. Kiz Arne himself, Sin Bodhi, talking all things Freak Show Wrestling out of Las Vegas. Talking about the Kiz Arne gimmick. Talking about growing up with Edge and Christian. It's a great show, and you're going to love it. And until then, have a great weekend. Love your weekend. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy! And go listen to Sun Cake for yourself. Make your own conclusions, and tell me what you think at Talk is Jericho. See you on Wednesday.
A very big thank you to everybody for coming along here today and making it, well, you know, you made the show anyway. Wonderful audience.